Welcome to the third episode of Dumble Belkia Season 12 Recaps from Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Harmstone, and joining me as always are the Canadian who regularly asks strangers if they want a quickie, Logan Saunders.
Good afternoon.
And the guy who threatens to destroy us almost every week, David Midley.
Good morning.
Oh my god, I loved that hand signal task so much. I know it's such an obvious me bait challenge, but I just loved it. I loved every second of it. I know Bindle said that he didn't love this episode as much as the previous two especially, but that challenge alone makes up for it for me.
Yeah, easily the highlight of the episode.
It's the only reality show where you can get away with contestants asking Sicilian men for sex.
Yeah.
And not get cancelled.
And it's still not being the least appropriate thing we've seen on this season.
The same episode where a freaking pasta bomb goes off.
Yeah. How's your week been, Bindles?
Pretty good.
I'm asking you first because I know what the answer's going to be when I ask Saunders. Okay. How was your week last week, Saunders?
Oh, let's see. So we recorded on Tuesday, right?
Yep.
So Wednesday, I flew out to Vegas for my friend's 40th. I was on the different flights than they were on the way there.
Yeah.
I think I was supposed to arrive 2 hours behind them. So we even had 30 minutes of overlap in the last layover in Calgary, because we went from Kelowna to Calgary to Vegas. So we had about a half an hour overlap in Calgary. They got on the plane to Vegas, and then 2 hours comes around. It's time to board. I get on the plane, or all of us, all the passengers are on the plane. And then about 20 minutes later, the flight attendant says, "There's a mechanical error with the plane. We all have to exit the plane. A new one will be ordered for us, and we should be getting on a new plane in a couple hours." And I was thinking, that seems a bit quick for a new plane. I'm going to guess closer to 4 hours. So we all get off the plane, and then we had to follow the guy because in Calgary you go through customs on the Canadian side before going to the States, as opposed to going through customs once you're in the States. It's just a Calgary Airport is like that for some reason. So we had to all go through customs in reverse and go back to the arrivals area of the airport. And then we all get a notification that we all got put on the plane 24 hours later. So then I was like calling the airline, trying to get an earlier flight, because that pretty much meant I was going to be missing on two of the three nights of the birthday trip for my friend's birthday. So I was able to get in 3 hours earlier than what they wanted me to. So it was 21-hour delay. So I was stuck in Calgary overnight. Then when I woke up, it was windy, snowy, and foggy. And I was thinking, geez, am I going to get canceled again? Instead, it was just a little over an hour delay for the flight to Seattle. Then Seattle also got delayed over an hour. Then did the celebration Vegas, and yeah, still got about a day and a half in there. Checked out Omega Mart in Vegas, which is really cool. It's like this weird sci-fi grocery store with all of these hidden doors that take you into all of these art installations in the back room and all of these different rooms, which was really cool. And yeah, and I stayed off strip this time. I stayed at the Golden Nugget and saw a bunch of 2000s boy bands, so O-Town, BB Mac, Chris Kirkpatrick of NSYNC, and the one guy from LFO that is still around. Because I didn't know this, but I guess like three members of LFO have died over the past 15 years or so. And yeah, that's what's happened since we last recorded.
Can I point out for anyone who doesn't realize the geography, if you drew a line on a map from Vernon, where Logan lives, to Seattle, it's only about 100 miles as the crow flies. It is not far away at all.
No, it's just over an hour. Yeah, I did. Yeah, Vernon drove to Kelowna Airport, Kelowna to Calgary, Calgary to Seattle, which is essentially like going backwards, and then Seattle back east in the other direction to get to Vegas. It was not an efficient path.
Yeah, because last time I was in Canada, when I went to Vancouver, we took the train from Seattle. So I know exactly how far it is.
Why didn't you just drive to Seattle at the start?
Because that would have been, it's still from where I live to Seattle, it's still like a 7-hour drive.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
It's only as the crow flies that it's about 100 miles.
Yeah.
It's not wonderful terrain in between.
Yeah, because once you get within about, I don't know, probably 20 kilometers of Seattle or so, traffic gets really, really, really bad. If anything, the first time I went to Vegas, I went to Bellingham Airport, which is just on the other side of the border. That's where people go if they fly to, if it's more expensive to fly from Vancouver or Calgary to get to Vegas. Because Allegiant Airlines is Vegas's discount airline, and you can fly from Bellingham to Vegas direct. So I did that the first time.
Right.
And the final bit of preamble, knowing how much fun we're going to have with the rest of the episode, is the fact that actually we didn't mention last week that Fuzzy did get her first bingo of the season in week one. Last week, not so much, because Bindles ruled quite cruelly on her, I would say.
Oh, the judging has become stricter? It's like Jeopardy now?
Yeah. I mean, when I did my pass, because I always do a sort of draft pass, I did have a column that she got, and Bindles ruled against it, which we've not told Fuzzy yet, so that's going to be hilarious for her.
Yeah.
And can we just say LOL Vivek in Big Brother Canada this week? Gets rid of his only ally out of the other 12 people in the house and somehow goes the following week in a twist.
Wow.
So previously the final nine got up close and personal with some ice pops to fulfill Jill's ice cream order before Senna got locked in a notorious prison and the first doubler was played. At a dilemma, Senna and Mikhail gave into temptation and opened Pandora's box, unleashing a pot drain in the middle of the night. Before the execution, Bernard's watch ended as he passed the power of the doublers to Lynn, but it was Caroline who became the second person sent home. Gilles ended the episode by showing us what was left unsaid, that once again the mole's name was written in Pandora's box. And we begin with Alessandra receiving a phone call from Don Salvatore warning of a group of friends sniffing around from a stupid TV show.
Even production considers themselves a stupid TV show.
As I said to Gilles last finale in the press room, the smartest, dumbest show on television.
Imagine if the Italian mafia was aware of Belgian Mole, and that's how they watched a couple episodes of it and thought, let's watch this Argentina season. What the hell is this paintball? What am I watching here?
That's the thing. They are semi-aware of the show, the mafia, because as Papa Bear said in a preseason interview, they went to some places of dubious ownership. There was very much mafia-adjacent behavior here. Even if they didn't directly interact with the mafia knowingly, there was very much mafia-adjacent behavior.
I wonder if the contestants who were police officers this episode were somehow less corrupt than the actual police in the area.
I mean, I think that's pretty likely.
And the episode title is another Charlotte one, which is You Don't End With Fucking Tagliatelle. Which is also a subplot in one of Logan's mucky videos.
I was about to say. Yeah.
I heard the Saunders giggle. I had to go for it. And it is day 7, still in the villa in Mitigio. And Senna and Mikhail are still sleeping, presumably after their late night wake-up call.
Contestants are completely oblivious that the Don of the local town just completely dissed them for how much money they've earned in the pot.
Yeah, they are stupid, and they just haven't earned any money.
Yeah, and I wonder if Salvatore is aware of just he must be aware of the percentage of the money they've earned in the pot compared to other seasons, because he just says, oh, not even 6,000 euros. How sad. They are not a threat to us. If it was the Vietnam cast, maybe I would intervene, or the Mexico cast with Lloyd. But they're not even at that threshold, so just let them do what they want to do. We can take care of them very, very easily.
And Coco is feeling a bit homesick. She still rings her mum every week. Lynn has recorded videos of her reading bedtime stories for her children. And she hid one of the doublers under her pillow, but then moves it to her bra.
As you do.
If Kathy did the same thing where she recorded videos for her family at home during the Argentina season, what do you think would be in Kathy's videos?
I'd be more worried about the prospect of Michelle recording videos for her children. It'd be bedtime stories of like, shut up, you little shits! Good to your father.
Otherwise, you're in the chokey, young lady.
I did send you guys the clip that I actually ended up having to cut from the Hunted episode of Michelle saying that her daughter was out of the oubliette and texting her about salad. And they drive into the hills of Catania during Sicilian rush hour, namely sheep being transported, and accompanied by Maremmas, which are very cute dogs.
Yeah, is that dog like shepherding them, or was it just there by coincidence?
Yeah, so Maremmas are, they're a particular Italian breed of livestock guardian dog. They're very cute, massively fluffy, but they are vicious little bastards if you come for the sheep or goats that they're protecting. They're bred to be vicious bastards.
Huh.
But they're adorable.
Yeah.
And Philippe teaches us the difference between goats and sheep bleating.
What's funny is that that seems like a talent that every old person has. Like, I feel like every old person just knows how to bleat like a goat or a sheep. I've never met an old person who can't do farm animal noises.
What do you reckon the age threshold of learning how to bleat is?
this is such a stupid conversation. At least 50. I think 50 and above, you can bleat.
This is your fault, Corners.
Yeah. This is entirely your fault.
I knew as soon as I said it out loud, I'm thinking, yeah, it sounded less offensive in my head than when I said it out loud.
Because Saturday is my dad's birthday, and I can ask him if he knows how to bleat like a sheep if you want. I will obviously preface the conversation with Saunders thinks you're old, so therefore can you bleat?
I didn't say it was 100% certainty that once you hit that, if you're 50, you've got the bleeding down. It's like that's like a general guideline of, yeah, if you're over 50, if I was in Vegas and you gave me good enough odds, I would say yes. I'd put a couple dollars down thinking that you could bleat.
What I heard was that you said there was a hard line that as soon as you turn from 49 to 50, you can bleat like a sheep. I'll go even further. I will ask Anne and Michelle if you want on Monday when we record.
Oh, that's right.
Both of them are over 50. I can ask them if they know how to bleat like a sheep if you want.
Are there different thresholds for different animals?
Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be some animals that are just easy bleating and then hard to bleat.
I love how this wasn't even a tangent that I expected us to go on today.
But this was my exact note while watching the episode today. I said, Philip does sheep and goat calls. Why do old people always do that?
So they are heading to... All I can hear is your giggling in my ears.
We've broken Saunders.
Yeah, it's not often we have this much in the way of Saunders giggles this early in an episode.
No.
So they are heading to Centuprefe, a town where time seems to have stood still. However, looks can be deceiving, shady things are happening here. It is the territory of Don Salvatore, and they will be joining the Federal Police. Four of them will become detectives, two of them beat cops, and two on dispatch. If everyone does their job well, they can earn €4,000 for the pot, unless, of course, Lynn decides to double it, and she holds on to her doubler.
Yeah, or you said they were four beat cops, but Philippe is part of them, so it'd be bleat cops. Anyways, and I noticed that when Papa Bear Jill DaCosta was saying shady things happen here, we cut to a montage of people wearing sunglasses in the streets, or shades. So I assume that was like an intentional Easter egg, especially with Easter being last week.
I will also say that he's not Papa Bear this week. He has a new nickname thanks to Bindles.
Yeah, this week he's the Godpapa.
The Godpapa.
I also realised when I was sort of drafting the notes earlier that we have called him three different things this season, so maybe it does have to be a recurring thing for us to come up with a new nickname every week. Because he's been Pastor Bear, he's been Papa Orso, and now he's the Godpapa. So get working on it.
Yeah. Next week we've got Mario Kart, so he can be Waluigi.
Needs a bit of work.
Yeah. We've got a week to workshop it.
Yeah. That's just a warning that I'm going to expect a new nickname every week now.
Yeah.
And don't forget, Saunders, that whatever the finale one is, you do have to call to his face.
Man, I can't. I don't even want to know what the nickname will be by episode 7 or 8, considering this week is God Papa.
I have obviously not heard from Jill this season yet, and it puts the fear of God in me when I do get an email off him. But I guarantee that when we get to the finale, he is going to make a beeline to chat to you, if nothing else.
You mean the fear of God Papa?
Yeah, exactly. The fear of God Papa. So at 4 locations around the town, a bag of money will be dropped, each worth €1,000. They can keep the money if they intercept it in time, but only if they can identify the correct mafioso at the end of the day using detective work. And of course, them dressing up is scored to the song that we quoted last week.
Yeah. What were the odds of that? That's the sound of the police.
I think going back to Gilles' emails, I think that's something where he goes, we're not pandering to you necessarily, but you just do the same references that we do. We are in sync here. And I think it's a case of them being very much in sync with us.
We should note, I don't know if we mentioned this last week, but that song was what played at the Canary Islands finale by the DJ repeatedly. He played it like 10 times during the finale in Palais 12.
I don't remember that. I must have blanked that memory out.
Yeah, because that was the first time I heard the KRS-One song. I can't remember the guy's name, because he works for the show. Because he kept playing that repeatedly during the breaks when they were setting up the talent challenges to hype up the crowd. He kept playing that, and also leading into the start of the episode.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I must have blanked it out. I think by that point I was too stressed that I was going to be wrong and that it was whichever one of Uma and Anka was actually left at the end was going to be the mole. You were right.
But yeah, I distinctly remember that because I was thinking, is this a newer song or a European song? Then I found out it was KRS-One. Like, well, I was way off on that.
So Bernard and Coco are the beat cops and they have flashing red lights all over their bodies and no more information from Gilles. So they decide to go for a walk. And they find a map of the town which looks like a human body. Their uniforms act as their map, and there are 9 potential locations for their costumes to identify. Senna and Charlotte must identify Italian songs in the form of ringtones and only answer those phones for tips. They ignore Bambaleo and answer Felicita, which was a correct decision. And each time they answer a correct phone, they've got 15 minutes to find the bag once the light has appeared. I know we joke a lot about this show pandering to us a little bit, but I never expected them to pander to the fact that Logan probably had all 10 of those phones up until about 2014.
More like 2016, Michael. Or 2017.
Actually, yeah, it was when you came to Europe that you got your first smartphone, wasn't it? So yeah, 2016.
Yes.
I apologize for underestimating you by 2 years.
And here I am saying, about what age you have to be to bleat, and yet I still had a flip phone till 2017, so I kind of set myself up there pretty good.
You had a flip phone for so long that flip phones have actually become a thing again.
My dad has a flip phone.
Your dad can bleat.
I'll ask him after this podcast. I'll have an update for next week.
Ask any person over the age of 50 that you know whether they can bleat.
Well, I was thinking this would have been a long time ago of like how I pictured somebody being 50. I'm going to revise the number to 60. Anyone over 60 likely can bleat.
What I want next week, by the time we record, is I want a hard number on where people start to be able to bleat. Is it that 62-year-olds can't and 63-year-olds can? That's what I want to know.
All right. Well, I'll put it out on all the socials.
Thanks. I mean, Philippe is our start point. He's 53, I think it was.
To just keep moving that line either up or down, right?
Yeah.
Is Philippe the exception to the rule or the standard?
Exactly.
It's the Bath Brent Courteous line. I'm sorry.
You should be. So the 4 detectives, which is Philippe, Mikael, Stephanie, and Lynn, are in charge of identifying the correct henchman. And they can unlock 3 tips: his height, his voice, and whether he has tattoos. The first hint is available at a tattoo shop, where 2 of them with a steady hand must draw 5 pictures with a tattoo gun, which the other 2 must then identify. If they get all 5 correct, they find out whether the henchman has a tattoo. If they don't, then there is a plan B option for them to get the clue. And they think the first bag is right on top of a hill, which seems a little mean. However, they went for the shoulder rather than the head where it was actually located and miss out on the €1,000.
That was a suspicious mistake to make.
It was, yes.
And was anyone creeped out by the one guy who just randomly like pressed Coco's button?
A little bit.
Well, she invited him to do it, to be fair.
That's true. He did ask first, like, can I push?
If you're going to push someone's buttons, you always ask for consent.
And then the way that Coco was confused and trying to orient herself when she was looking at the map was very much the same way that Angie Everhart would try to orient herself physically with the map during the corn maze challenge in Celebrity Mole Yucatan. And oddly enough, on the way to Vegas, the guy sitting next to me on the plane, we had a conversation about Celebrity Mole Yucatan and about Dennis Rodman for like 20 minutes. So if we have a new follower on the RTV Warriors account, it's probably the guy who sat next to me on the plane, Michael.
I was going to say, did you mention that we do a podcast about Mole every week and that this is season 21 for us?
I don't know if I said the exact season number, but we talked a lot about the Mole and Amazing Race, I believe, on the plane ride. And Big Brother. He was a finalist. He was a finalist for Big Brother Canada once.
Ah, hmm. Interesting.
I got further than you.
Yeah, he's made further than me.
So Lynn and Mikhail identify 4 of the 5 pictures correctly, but miss Philippe's blurred eagle, thinking that it was a dove. They have an alternative option, which is that one of them can get a real tattoo of the answer, either yes or no. And Stephanie volunteers.
Philippe, I do not think, is the best artist in this group.
No, he's the best artist. He was self-proclaimed the best artist.
Yeah.
I think, therefore, I am.
And to be fair to him, it didn't look like Stephanie was really doing much. Like, Stephanie could have tried.
I think you always have to have a little bit of apprehension if you're doing a challenge that takes you to a tattoo shop and says, yeah, you need to get this perfect, or there's an alternative that one of you can do.
Yeah.
I think you know what's coming at that point.
Yeah. It's like how when they got to the barber shop and they sort of guessed it was going to be head shaving.
Yeah. Would either of you get a tattoo on the mole for a mini challenge?
Of course I wouldn't.
All I was thinking was, well, she can't go into a Japanese onsen.
It does seem to be a prerequisite for this show to cast people who are willing to get tattoos for bullshit reasons. Because we had it in Canary Islands as well, where they just all got drunk and got a banana tattooed on themselves.
It should have been for the... Stephanie says, oh yeah, I'll get this eagle tattoo, and then it's like a Steve-O size tattoo on her back of an eagle.
Now what they should have done is translated Philippe's picture of the dove, or picture of the eagle, and made that the tattoo.
Just with the smudge and everything.
Oh god, yeah. The smudge is an essential part of the dove or pigeon, whichever one you want to call it.
But then the tattoo artist gets in trouble because people would ask Stephanie, what's your tattoo of? Oh, it's an eagle. Oh, who is your tattoo artist? Granted, her friends probably weren't going to go to Sicily and go to that specific tattoo artist to get a tattoo, but
you
still,
never know.
Not good for the tattoo artist.
So the second phone call start coming through and they answer That's Amore, which is obviously very much not an Italian song, and it sends them to the wrong shoulder and not back to the very lookout point that Coco and Bernard went to. The other 3 detectives have a chance to earn the henchman's height by sending 2 people in who are experts in body language. Lynn and Mikhail volunteer, and they are presented with 8 representations of hand signals, 7 of which are deeply offensive in the Italian language, and one of them is for secret meeting. They must identify that one and relay it to the doctor to earn the height. This is a contender for my favourite Belgian Mole sub-challenge ever.
Especially because there was no censorship as to which hand signals weren't allowed to be part of the choices.
I just love that they started by both of them doing the fuck you gesture. Straight away, no messing about, and like, nah, it's definitely not that one. But one of them I recognized because I used to work with a Spanish guy, and he taught me a lot of Spanish swear words, and the kind of catch-all one is chupamela, which is suck a dick. And that is accompanied by one of the actions that they actually had in this challenge, which is the stroking your chin one. So as soon as they had the stroking your chin one, I'm like, that's definitely offensive. That's pretty much just fuck off, suck a dick, whatever you want, the catch-all Spanish insult. And Coco would have identified that, but it's delightful that it appears in this challenge.
I'm surprised the gesture for that isn't Aiden on an icy pole.
Yeah, for some reason, one of the gestures wasn't just the sucking a dick motion.
Why can't it just be straightforward?
There's five potentially rogue ones. There's Chupamela, which anyone who comes from a Mediterranean or Central European background probably knows. And there's also the fellatio motion, just to give them an easy one to rule out.
And poor Lynn, who has already been kicked down enough so far in three episodes, is forced to do the quickie hand signal.
I love that they even, because they weren't 100% certain, they found locals to ask and still did the ones that they were pretty sure were offensive to them, including, I will destroy you, in the mood for a quickie, and shall we go to bed together? All of which are famously in Saunders Collection. I just love it. It's just such a challenge that absolutely no other show can get away with doing.
No.
And I think it's actually made better by the fact that Mikhail, again, puts himself in a situation where he's going to mortify his family.
Excellent.
So, yeah, they end up working out what the correct hand signal is for secret meeting, which is the two fingers coming together, and find out that the henchman is 166 centimeters tall. However, there was a very important question raised on Discord this evening, which was, we never found out what the plan B was going to be for this.
You have to get the hand signal tattooed. You have to perform one of the actions in the hand signal. Instead of deciphering the quickie hand signal, you have to have a quickie with the Sicilian local.
The plan Bs that we saw were themed around the location. So obviously the tattoo shop, you had to get a tattoo as the plan B. The barber shop, you had to get a haircut as the forfeit. Could it be something like one of them had to get a prostate exam? And also, given Mikhail's background talking about the testicular cancer, he probably would have volunteered for that.
Jeez.
I love that we're genuinely considering this.
I'm trying to figure it out, yeah, what it would be.
It has to be something medically themed. And the joke answer, quote-unquote joke, because obviously it's an incredibly important medical procedure and it 100% saves lives. But I feel like for a TV show like this, and I'm thinking more in the Impractical Jokers realm because they've done this as a forfeit before, I could absolutely see them training a camera on Mikhail while he gets a prostate exam. Stunned silence.
Yeah, I'm trying to one-up that response and I can't.
Yeah, they were talking about it on Discord this evening, and I'm like, even though it's a joke, a quote-unquote joke answer to say, oh yeah, they're going to give him a prostate exam, I could absolutely see them doing that as a forfeit.
And the good news is they didn't play a doubler on this challenge.
Because two fingers would have gone up there then.
Two quickies?
Yeah, if Lynn had played a doubler, would two of them had to get tattoos, two of them have to get the haircuts, two of them have a prostate exam?
No, one of them gets the letter S and one of them gets the letter I.
So the third call comes through and they reject a couple of incorrect ones before accepting the correct one, sending Coco and Bernard to the left leg.
To the Coco Cabana.
And Coco and Bernard find the money bag under the bench and finally earn €1,000 for the stake. Stephanie also returns to the group with her tattoo, telling them the henchman also has tattoos. And the final challenge is at the barbershop, where two of them must memorize the shop, while five objects will change while they're having a hair wash. And they know exactly what the plan B is going to be, which is a haircut. Senna identifies Despacito, which is Puerto Rican.
They didn't identify it as Puerto Rican, though.
They didn't identify it as Puerto Rican, but that also appeared in the Vid and Pub Quiz challenge this year. It's the year of Despacito.
Mm. I wonder if they let this go on long enough, one of the ringtones would have been Macarena.
You just hear Drunk Your Own in the background going, it's Macarena! I know that one, Lost El Rio! Despacito is also, and I'm sure I've mentioned this before, one of the filthiest songs ever to get to UK number one. The lyrics are absolute filth.
And I even had Miami Sound Machine there. I was not expecting a Gloria Estefan reference this week either in the mall.
I do wonder where they got some of the MIDI ringtones from. They must have had to make them themselves.
I feel like all these songs would have had ringtones somewhere on the internet, on the interwebs.
Despacito is way too modern to have been part of the chiptune revolution.
Will that be 2016?
Yeah. You're not going to be texting a short code off your phone to get Despacito in chiptune, are you?
That'd be a bit late, yeah. I'm sure if we looked it up on YouTube, there's probably like 10 or so ringtone versions of Despacito.
Yeah, even when I was at school, which is obviously a long time ago at this point, they just started kind of phasing out the text a number to a short code to get a MIDI version of a song as your ringtone. So they identified the hairdryer, the folder, the calendar, and the dog's collar, but not the fact that the barber changed shirts.
Trick question.
Yeah. And if they want to hear the voice of the criminal, they need to go for plan B, which is obviously one of them getting the 4-digit code to the barber's phone shaved into the back of his head. And Philippe volunteers for it, surprisingly.
Well, he didn't have much hair to lose.
Yeah.
And Bernard mistakes a rubbish bag for the hold all, and the fourth bag is lost. So they identify Alessandra as the accomplice, and that is correct, meaning they earn 1,000 euros of 4,000 for the challenge.
Did you guys recognize Alessandro's voice right away from the voicemail? Because I did.
Yeah, I did.
Well, I mean, he was introduced as Alessandro at the start of the episode, so we sort of had a bit of a leg up.
Yeah, I guess that spoils it. And just them only getting one out of four bags, that was... I bumped them up. I bumped both Bernard and Coco high up on the suspect list because of that. They should have been, because there was one out of three bags, really. They should have been able to get at least two of them. I think you have to really screw it up to only get one out of three. Especially with how they weren't really hustling as fast and just how far off they were with orienting themselves within the town. It just seemed a bit excessive that they only got that. They weren't even remotely close to two of the three bags.
I think this week is potentially interesting because I think the mole probably took a bit of a backseat this week, knowing what had happened at the end of last episode and how the pot was really depleted.
And underrated moment of that challenge is Coco getting spooked by the cat while walking through the alley.
Yeah, we had that spoiled, sadly, in the Next Time preview last week. But yeah, it really made me laugh a second time. And after the challenge, Papa Bear takes them out for drinks and teaches them about Sicilian culture.
Which apparently includes hanging out with old people, Jill was saying.
And popping a wheelie on a kid's bike.
I did like Jill suggesting he didn't want to go out for dinner with eight cops. And I'm like, well, yeah, because you might end up in prison for real this time.
And also, it's not the best look in a mafia town.
No.
Also, if they're showing respect to the old people, they can ask some typical old people questions like... Do you know how to bleat like a goat?
I hear there's an Italian hand expression to ask that. I wish the notes that they made the criminals read out, I wish it was more like just completely random song lyrics. I felt like that would be more Belgian Mole style. Like maybe they read out the lyrics to Careless Whisper by George Michael or maybe it's Willie Summers lyrics. I feel like that would have been more entertaining. Or the Ketchup song.
Alessandro, can you read out the lyrics to Despacito, please? And try and make them as family-friendly as possible.
No hand signals, please.
So we get a mid-episode briefing, which is Jill saying, hello, Mole, how are you?
I think you have the trust of a large part of the group, but I've earned little money today.
You remember what we're doing tomorrow? I need four names from you.
Coco, Bernard, Mikhail, Charlotte. He would like to shut them up.
Ha ha.
And it is day 8 in Agira, a village further inland. The four who the mole shut up have come to breakfast late, and they were told that one of the key principles of the Sicilian Mafia is Omerta, the code of silence. Each of them that doesn't speak for the next 2 hours will earn 500 euros for the pot.
This does kind of feel like a cement shoe challenge failed, and this was the backup.
Yeah, this is a very interesting... filler challenge. Obviously there are some potential comedic moments that arise from it, but this is very much a shit, you guys drain the pot a little bit too much, so we're gonna have to give you basically some free money challenge to me.
How do you feel about the doubler not being an option for this challenge?
Well, I have a theory, because of course I do. I think if Lynn had been picked, she would have got the option to use a doubler.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
So I think it's slightly bullshit that obviously the mole could control that, but I think if Lynn was in a position to actually know what the challenge was about, I think she would have had the option there.
Hmm.
Would she have to signal silently if she was using the doubler?
Well, I presume she would have had to just say it before the code of silence starts now. It would have been a split-second decision for her. And I mean, out of the three challenges, I think you probably would go for this one if you had the option.
Yeah.
But I think she probably would have had the option in that situation, but the mole, for whatever reason, was given the power over choosing who got the code of silence and sidelined her as a result. So the other four try and make them talk, thinking that they will get personal benefits if they don't. And when the clock chimes, they each get another secret task for 500 euros. Coco is the first one, and she must make sure that Philippe weighs exactly 75.4 kilos within 5 minutes. And he just kind of goes along with it.
Mm.
I'm glad the butcher knife wasn't brought out to like cut off pieces of skin or something to try and balance out the 75.4 kilograms.
It's not sore.
You're too heavy. We're going to have to remove your spleen.
And then the other question becomes, how do you know the exact weight of a spleen to make sure we get down to 75.4 kilograms?
Well, she is a nurse.
That's true. It's like Stephanie got a tattoo to help succeed at a challenge. Philippe lost a pinky finger to make 75.4 kilograms so that they would earn 500 euros for the pot.
It would have been awkward if they had to do it with somebody who was already over 75.4 kilos.
Get in the sauna.
I presume, not obviously understanding how kilograms work, that that was probably about 10 kilos that he had to gain, something like that.
Possibly. It does seem like an oddly specific amount.
Yeah, I don't know what 75.4 actually converts into, but I presume it was he had to add about 5 or 10 kilos in 5 minutes, something like that. So Mikhail gets the second task, and he takes Lynn. He has to get her to sing a medley of two children's songs with the same melody within 5 minutes, alternating lines from each song without hesitation or error. And she succeeds, but he breaks his code of silence in his enthusiasm.
Yeah!
And costs them the 500 euros.
That was so ridiculous. Yeah! He blew it.
No, that was last week.
75.4 kilos to stop anyone writing in is a smidge under 12 stone. So yeah, he probably had to add about 5 stone to his weight in 5 minutes.
Forgot stones was a way to measure weight.
And the last task is collectively for Bernard and Charlotte. They must get the non-silent four to swim 2 lengths each within 5 minutes for 1,000 euros. However, each person must be faster than the last. They easily succeed, but Charlotte breaks the silence too in her enthusiasm.
At the very, very last minute. Which I guess is the same way that Mikhail screwed up too.
And they earn 2,000 euros for the mini task, plus 1,000 euros for the silence, for a total of 3,000 and 4,000 for that challenge. And I was saying this to Bindles earlier, it would have been really, really funny if when Jill says, oh, the code of silence is going to end after my next sentence, he just hands someone a phone and then walks off. That would have been perfect Belgian mole. I think they were a little bit too kind letting them all phone home here. I would have really tested their resolve with the 500 euros.
I think they lose the 500 euros from both people on that one.
Yeah,
I'm obviously joking. There was no way Bernard was not going to talk to his pregnant wife, but...
Yeah, apparently she's super pregnant, it sounds like.
Yeah, she ain't coming for a family visit.
No.
And I guess that was just one of those side missions in the mole where... It's just where production takes pity on the cast and says, here's a few grand for the pot. This isn't Dutch Mole. We actually want you to win something.
Yeah. I do think back to Argentina where they basically had this dilemma, but with Chain Gang instead. Because the Chain Gang dilemma, if you cast your mind back, was anyone who escapes will be in the hotel and able to have a chat home the next morning. Anyone who's not will stay in the warehouse and miss out on the chance to phone home. So it's not out of the question for Gilles to say, oh, by the way, your code of silence ends after my next sentence, and then hands one of the non-silent people a phone.
I should note that even with the massive pot drain last episode, that the current pot is already over the Vidim pot
yep.
at the end of the season, even with the massive pot drain.
And the maximum up to this point was 42k, I think it was, which is, I mean, less than half of what the realistic pot for Vidim would have been by the end of the season.
Yeah, right now in my notes I have it at 44k is the max after the talking challenge.
So Jill does let them break their silence after his next sentence, which is that they can call home. And the only one that I really noted, other than the nice family scenes and all that nonsense Michelle hates, is that Senna says he's keeping his diary up to date so his girlfriend can read it when he gets home. I know I'm in a Senna tunnel, but could they have put that in to refer to the diary of the mole?
Nah.
I know neither of you are on Senna this week, but it just set my radar off a little bit, being in the Senna tunnel. So after the phone calls, they drive to Acireale, a small town on the coast. However, one of their two cars is in the garage, leaving two replacement cars in the form of Piaggio Alpes.
Why is the one BMW being repaired? Is it a Boeing BMW? Like, what's going on there?
It's an excuse. Interestingly, not to sound like the sort of person who would end up bleating for Logan Saunders when he asked them nicely, in the puzzle magazine that I was doing last night, there was a puzzle all about cars, and I'm like, Piaggio, I don't recognize that one. Where's that one from? And then obviously it appears in this episode, and I'm like, ah, it's Sicilian, that's interesting.
No, it's Romanian.
We're not back to working out where cars are from again. We did enough of that with Dacia last week. So four of them will drive the BMW, leaving two pairs in the replacements, and it is Bernard and Mikhail and Philippe and Charlotte in the Piaggios. Also of note, this is the suspect list question this week. Did the mole go in an Alpe? Hilariously, Thomas hadn't watched the episode by this point, and every time I publish a suspect list question, he checks it to make sure it's not broken. And he read the question and went, was the mole in an ape? What show is this?
That's one of Logan's videos again.
No, that's a horse, Spindles. Come on now.
Finally, we have confirmation. It's taken us months. So while driving, the Alpes get a call warning of the revenge of Don Salvatore.
Yeah, I would say that Don Salvatore went Alpe shit about his money being missing.
And one of the two Alpes has been rigged with a bomb.
What would have been better is if when Salvatore's on the phone saying, oh yeah, you took my money. There are consequences to be paid. But we only got $1,000. Oh, $1,000? Oh, don't worry about it. That's nothing. I'll let you keep the $1,000. That outweighs the cost of the bomb.
I do wonder what the excuse they would have used if they got no money in the Mafia challenge, would have it? Because it's like, oh,
there's no revenge to be taken.
It's the revenge of Don Salvatore, but we didn't actually do anything to him. Yes, we may have caused a brief amount of inconvenience, but we identified the wrong henchman and didn't pick up any bags. So, you know, no harm, no foul.
Yeah, and then you tell him, like, one of us got a tattoo, Don Salvatore. Another person got numbers etched into the back of their head. And now you're putting a bomb in one of our apes? Like, where do you get off, Salvatore? Like, what's the deal with that, man? You're spending thousands of euros on a bomb, and we didn't even earn any money out of it, and it came at our own detriment. Like, show some mercy, buddy.
It probably would have been something like, you know, we heard you were nosing around just to make sure it doesn't happen again. There's a bomb in one of your cars.
Yeah. So Gilles meets him at the side of the road and explains what has happened. All they have to do is decide which of the Alpes has got the bomb in it. The four of them had a duel, a pasta duel. They had to take turns naming types of pasta, and whichever duo lost will be bombed, and both of them will have a negative pass frog for tonight's test. And they each get to six before it gets a little bit tougher. How do you think you would have done with naming types of pasta?
I don't know if I would have gotten 14, but I was surprised that fettuccine never came up, because that was one of the first ones I thought of.
Yeah, there's a few really obvious ones that didn't come out.
The interesting one, and the one that's caused a little bit of debate, is gnocchi.
I was thinking that too, because that popped up in my head, and I was thinking, is that really considered a pasta?
Yeah, both of you have far more European heritage than I do.
Despite the fact that you actually live there.
Yeah, if you're aware of the television program Who Do You Think You Are, and I know it airs in Australia, I'm not sure if it does in Canada, the answer to Who Do You Think You Are in my family is, yeah, the most exotic you're going to get is probably Ireland, let's be honest.
It's like, as Michael Scott would say, it's a proper United Nations.
We're not going to get any Holocaust or slavery-themed episodes in my family. It's going to be potato famine at best.
Well, you're still young.
Like, you guys, especially Saunders. I mean, we haven't mentioned it really this season, but Saunders' family escaped the Mafia from Sicily. He very much has the local knowledge compared to me, especially.
Yeah.
I like how that's just become a running joke for the past 10 years.
Yeah, and my favorite thing is, and Bindles and I were saying this after you left us after one of the Venom episodes a few months ago. Like, you've forgotten that we remember this. You've forgotten that we joke about this for years. It's gone by the wayside, and as soon as Sicily was announced, I'm like, yes, Mafia jokes again.
It's gone.
It's back.
So the question of whether gnocchi is a pasta, I thought I'd go in a little bit of a deep dive on this and try and work it out. And the answer is, to get a bit Australian, yeah, because it depends where you are in Italy. In the northern bit of Italy, they do not consider it a pasta because it's potato dumplings. They consider it a potato-based dumpling. The further south you go, and obviously Sicily's at the very southern tip of Italy, the answer's kind of yeah, because in Sicily, apparently, they have a pasta dough-based version of gnocchi, which means it's considered as a pasta.
Ah, okay.
So the more, I guess, Americanized or Northern Italy version of gnocchi is potato-based. That isn't a pasta. The further south you go, the more likely it is that they use pasta dough in it, and therefore the answer is yes for them. So it's kind of a yeah, no, situation.
If it wasn't for the fact that it was Philippe in that pair, and I'm kind of not sure about Charlotte, I would have maybe considered it possibly a little bit of a clue, because that game they were playing going backwards and forwards, that's also known as hot potato, which does feel like the sort of thing they would, you know, use as a clue.
Yeah, good point.
Also, I can't believe none of them said orzo.
Yeah, I think, depending on obviously who you were with, you could maybe have eked out a few more, but yeah, the upper limit of this challenge is probably not more than about 2,000, really.
Yeah.
I was really hoping that when Charlotte and Philippe messed up, that one of the fake pasta names they would come up with would be like Pavarotti or Bocelli. That would have been hilarious. And just have producers say, no, lay off, guys.
No, it's 100 euros per answer, not a tenner.
Yeah.
So the other four must then work out where the bomb will explode, and each correct answer was worth 100 euros as well. So they are playing for 1,400 euros, which Lynn then decides to double as it's the last challenge of the episode, and, you know, she's got control of the doublers for this challenge. If they pick the correct car, they will earn the money, and Charlotte and Philippe will be penalised. If they pick wrong, everyone else has a negative pass frog, and they earn no money. Interesting twist of a negative pass frog. This is definitely the sort of thing that they are going to bring back, the concept of a negative pass frog.
I think they've done it before, haven't they?
Because they've done similar. I mean, we've had similar twists to that, where it's like, this person is currently penalized. Now they have to deceive you in order to get some sort of reward or be on equal footing with everyone else.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see it appear as a question mark at some point in an actual physical thing. I do wonder what shape it'd be. Maybe they'll go octagonal for that.
It's an icosahedron.
Do you think the mole had to work that hard in this challenge?
No. I think as soon as Bernard and Mikhail started being really sus, I think the mole's work was already done, to be honest.
Yeah.
And they both got positive pass frag in the, because of Pandora's box, right?
No, that was Senna.
It was Senna. Okay. So maybe they already had it out for Mikhail.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If you're going to have Mikhail in a position where there's advantages, he's going to be immediately suspicious because he's proven that he will think completely personally rather than for the group.
Good for him.
Yeah, he plays a ball to the wall.
So they are distracted by the fact that Bernard and Mikhail don't cook or shop and Philippe and Charlotte do. And after 10 minutes, they decide that Bernard and Mikhail are the liars and they earn nothing of €2,800 for the challenge, €4,000 of €10,800 for the episode, and €9,640 of €44,800 for the season so far.
They were so certain it was them. Because what's funny is that there is a massive hint, because I thought for sure that the players were going to figure out who was telling the truth, because Charlotte at the start says, well, they screwed up on the 15th name. So that means Mikhail and Bernard would have to go first, but then Philippe immediately says, we started by saying spaghetti. So that means Charlotte and Philippe would have been the first one, which means they should have been also the ones who supplied the 15th and incorrect pasta name. I'm surprised that it just went way over their heads, where they got distracted by Bernard sweating, and that's what they went off of. I was thinking that was just a huge hint right at the very beginning of that debate. How did they miss that?
Yeah, well, as luckily this isn't a show where observations are key.
Yeah, observations just secondary on the mole.
And the good news for us is, of course, that the bomb still goes off in Charlotte and Philippe's car. And it's not a normal paint bomb. Oh, no. Because it's Italy, it's a pasta bomb.
Yay!
I totally saw that come, and I'm like, is it going to be a pasta bomb? Is it going to be a pasta bomb? Yes, it's a pasta bomb.
The only problem with them doing pasta bombs is that ragu that they used was a bit too thick to actually fire at them properly. So they didn't get as covered as they should have done.
Yeah, it was a bomb knives.
So it's now time for the test. 20 questions about the identity and actions of the mole. Whoever knows least goes home, except for the mole who can never go home. And everyone apart from Charlotte and Philippe have a negative pass frog for this test.
I like how, not mean to go back a bit, but just how Charlotte and Bernard have probably the most ridiculous confrontation during the challenge I've seen, just because they're trying to throw suspicion onto the other as to who supplied the wrong pasta name. And then Charlotte says, they said Spirelli. And then Bernard just says, you know, fuck you, man. I'm thinking, since when do you say F you over being accused of saying Spirelli in a challenge? That seems like an excessive overreaction.
Isn't that one of the characters in Recess?
Yeah, Spirelli. I think that's Spinelli, isn't it?
It's Spinelli, I think.
Spinelli, yeah. They said Spinelli. He said a Recess character instead of a pasta dish. Fuck you, man. I know the characters of Recess.
I am presuming that this challenge was done in association with our friends over at the Tomato Company that are a sponsor of this season that I mentioned during Vidim.
I wonder if they had sort of somebody on site just sort of verifying the pastas.
I wonder if it was like a 10-minute gap before they said, yeah, we'll count Naki.
I guess you've got to, because, I mean, we know from Lisa's Instagram story that she was having a look at a list of pasta on Sunday as a hint. I'm assuming there was a list of acceptable pasta that someone in production had and said, yep, you can do it, because that's probably why they filmed it half an hour beforehand. I would have loved it if they'd gone that long that the half an hour had been up and they were still arguing, though. I wonder how long they would have actually delayed the BMW coming.
Bernard's reputation also took a bit of a hit in this challenge, because they were saying, oh, Bernard doesn't do groceries and he never cooks. He said a Recess character as a pasta dish. And he's way too nervous, he's sweating. And Linda even calls him Manipulator Bernard as his nickname without the hashtag. Yeah, Bernard, not the group doesn't think too much of him. I think the group thinks more of Lynn than Bernard at this point.
The other thing I've just thought of with Bernard as well is he has the history, as does Mikhail, obviously. Mikhail has the history from Pandora's Box, but Bernard has the history from episode one of proving that he's a good liar and getting control of the doublers. So both of them are in a car together, if you can legally call that a car. Both of them are in that vehicle together, and they're both proven liars, and they're both proven selfish characters in a way. So you have them versus Philippe and Charlotte. And Charlotte may be a little bit brusque, but neither of them have been proven to lie so far in this show. So actually, for the group of four, I see why they did it. Just I think the mole was in that group of four anyway, so I'm not surprised the mole led them away from the correct answer. So Charlotte says she has an extra point, so she's glad she could lie well. Philippe wouldn't have used the doubler. She used it in a place where she could decide whether money was earned, which was suspicious. Bernard keeps coming for Senna. He was nervous in the RPs. What is strange is that you get more nervous when you tell the truth. Charlotte lied well and convinced Coco. It was a surprise to her. She also thinks Bernard took a street too far and stopped them getting her back. Mikhail says Senna always remains calm but in the right place, and he stays in the background. Mikhail wasn't on Lynn's radar, but he has been for the past few days, and it's the second time that he's made a mistake out of enthusiasm in three episodes. Philippe said he could draw well, but his eagle looked like a pigeon, so it's suspicious to Stephanie. And Lynn says no one in the group stands out as not being the mole right now. The Godpapa says that they've learned some things this week. First, that they all look good dressed in uniform, that money finally came back into the pot, and of course, that you can't mess with the Mafia. Six of them are penalised, and that makes the execution unpredictable. They still have two doublers left, so Lynn has to hand them off, and she gives them to Charlotte, playing the odds. Charlotte, Bernard, Senna, and Stephanie all get green screens before it's Philippe who gets the red one, just as we predicted last week.
So much for that advantage, buddy.
He must have done really badly to have overcome the fact that six of the other seven people had a disadvantage over him.
I wonder if he got a score of zero, because he said that because when he's talking to Jill, he's like, what happened, Philippe? And he says, oh, I spread too much on the quiz. I'm thinking, if you spread too much on the quiz, you probably spread on like four or five people and none of them were the mole.
Yeah, at this point, you should be spreading on three people max. This is, to skip ahead slightly, the last week that we're doing three suspects. You should be roughly between three and two at this point, I think.
Yeah, but I was thinking he was probably could spread on even more with his advantage, and he still went home, which means he wasn't on the identity of the mole at all. What was funny is right before the execution, I wrote Philippe gone. Even with the advantage, I was thinking I could see a guy like him just still screwing it up. And then Stephanie was the fourth name, and she's still my top suspect, I believe, for the second week running. And I was thinking, okay, either I'm losing my top suspect or my bottom suspect right here, right now.
Yeah, it was a very stressful execution for me because I was thinking about this after we recorded last week, and I think it was even before I'd edited last week, that actually there is a clear divide in this final eight for me, in that I think all the people I quite enjoy in this season are on my team, and all the people who maybe I wouldn't mind seeing go are on your team. So when we got to the execution this week, I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Charlotte gets the first green screen. Not a surprise, really. Then Bernard, also on your team, gets a green screen. I'm like, oh shit, here we go. Music's building, I could hear it. Senna was the next one. The music kept building. I'm like, oh fuck. Am I going to lose my first suspect again from the last 2 weeks again? No, he gets a green screen. Then it's Stephanie. I'm like, yeah, I can accept her going home. She gets a green screen. I'm like, there is one person left who isn't on my team out of this last four people who could get a screen. Then it's Philippe who gets called up next. I'm like, if he gets a green screen, I'm absolutely buggered here. Shit. And then he gets the red screen. I'm like, oh, thank God for that. It was a relief for me because I'm way more competitive at these sort of things than you are, as has been previously established.
No way.
I actually care, and Saunders is like, yeah, I lost, whatever.
Yeah.
We lost bleatin' Philippe. Any thoughts on bleatin' Philippe?
I've only got two words really for him, which is, he gone!
Yeah, I never really suspected him. I think he was my, what was it, number four. Actually, never mind. In the first week, he was my fourth suspect. Then, by the end of week two, I had him second to last after Carolyn. And I was just thinking, yeah, he's not the mole.
Yeah, he was, I think, second bottom, only above Lynn in first suspicions. A lot of people did very well out of Philippe going, in terms of they didn't suspect him. He had no first suspicions again. He's the second person of three in this season to go home having had no first suspicions. Obviously, the group liked him a little bit more than we did. I'm a bit more charmed by a lot of the people who were left, I think, so it's no major loss to me that he went.
I feel like with the group we have now, there will be a lot more confrontation.
Yeah. The thing worth pointing out with him going home is the fact that Mikhail is now the oldest person in the cast at 41.
Well, he is a grandfather.
He is. But we're heading towards Netflix mole territory of the oldest person left being in their 40s now.
Did we talk about what the mole would have done in the first challenge?
No, we didn't. I think it's tough because I do think the mole took a back seat this week.
Yeah.
I think the pot drain went a little bit further than maybe they were anticipating. So I think the mole probably gave them a nice week this week. I mean, there was obviously the middle challenge that was significantly easier than most challenges also at any money. So I'm not sure if there is an ideal position for the mole in that challenge. I think probably you want to be in the detectives team because you've got most places to hide and you're actually in control of whether they earn the money. But there are arguments, I would say, for either of the other two teams as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking it would either be the... Well, I guess with the cell phone team, that would be... Well, no, because some of the songs were just... If you're being partnered up, it's a bit tougher to say, answer the phone when it's a Miami Sound Machine song and think it's Italian, where they're going to say, that's a... Did you really think that was an Italian song?
You could identify it wrongly, though. That's the thing. It's stuff like the error with That's Amore. If it is Senna, as I obviously suspect it is, then he could have led Charlotte towards, oh, that's got Italian lyrics, that must be Italian. There are ways for the mole to influence that one, definitely.
Do you think the mole only made one mistake then in that first challenge of either just saying, well, if I'm on the ringtone one, I'll just pick up one incorrect ringtone to take it easy on the group, or if I'm in hunting for the bags, I'll just miss out on one bag on purpose, where we go to the shoulder instead of the head, or with the four detectives there, where it's just, okay, maybe I screw, well, that was Philippe who did the drawing of the eagle, but maybe I intentionally ignore that the barber changed his t-shirt, where it's just one throwaway of just one, making sure 1,000 euros is taken out rather than full-on sabotage.
Yeah, I think if you know the group as the mole does, you go, well, I don't need to be on the ground because they're going to fuck up anyway. There's no way they're going to get all four bags. So maybe I'll just mess up one of the ringtones and stop them getting a maximum. If they get the three bags, then hats off to them. I'll just go harder on them next time. I think there's an argument to be made for any of the three teams here, to be honest. And that's not me being in a tunnel, even though I am. I think there is a combination of the mole probably wants to take it a little bit easier, as we sort of heard in the mid-episode briefing. Plus, you can kind of make an argument for any of the three roles in that first challenge, to be honest.
Yeah.
So Philippe says that he spread, but probably too much. Bernard said he was full of the youthful energy in the group. He's going home with a barrel full of new experiences and emotions. He started as a literal cliffhanger. And I also don't think at the time we spotted him dropping a water bottle from the mast when he was thrown around. You can see it in the montage, but I don't think we actually clocked it when we were joking about him hanging from his hazelnuts. But when he drops so suddenly that he drops the water bottle as well that he's carrying. And he's going home with a souvenir, which is the code in his hair. And he's going home to see his new grandson, Noah.
Oh, from Germany season.
Yeah.
He's about the right age.
So next time, Belkia finally goes for Mario Kart after all these years. There is pizza, the threat of deportation, and the mole speaks directly to the candidates. And just for Thomas, the episode ends with the mole saying, "Hello, Mikhail," which I'm taking as pandering to us now.
I really hope that's why they chose that clip instead of any of the other players.
I know that Gilles said to us specifically last year in email, "No, we don't pander to you. You just have a lot of the same references that we do." But I'm absolutely going to ride with the fact that they're pandering to us until I hear otherwise.
Main character syndrome.
Yeah, obviously. I love the attention. What could I say? So on the pool, forgive me if I'm repeating myself from last year, but with Philippe's departure, Logan is now down to three people in week three, with Stephanie, Charlotte, and Bernard left. I still have my new full team, Senna, Mikhail, Coco, and Lynn. On first suspicions, three people, Jack, Yorin, and Jason, had Philippe at number nine, and no one had him as first suspicion, as I said, but three people, Cal D, Tim, and Alan, all had him at number two. Our current joint leaders with a perfect score of 28 are Yorin and Jason, while Carl is bringing up the rear on 40. Our teams are now tied, excluding the three of us, both on 4.85 on the non-adjusted average, and it is now a perfect tie on the adjusted score as well, with a perfect four each. The adjusted order is now Senna on 3.11 out of 7, Charlotte on 3.32, Coco on 3.71, Stephanie on 3.79, Mikhail on 3.86, Bernard on 4.89, and Lynn on 5.32. And Stephanie and Mikhail have swapped since last week. You can, as always, do the Bothers About Suspect list at suspectlist.rtvwarriors.com or the link in our bio. And as I said, the question this week is whether the mole was in an ARPE or not. Last week, Flanders' suspicions were Senna on 18%, which is up 5% from the week before, Stephanie on 15%, which is up 5%, Bernard on 13%, which is down 1%, Mikhail on 13%, which is the same as the week before, Philippe on 12% plus 1%, Coco on 11% plus 2%, Charlotte on 10% minus 3%, and Lynn bringing up the rear on 8% up 2% from week 1. Final two questions. Who do we suspect and who's going home?
So my suspect list in order: Stephanie, Coco, Bernard, Charlotte, Senna, Mikhail, then Lynn. And I think we are going to lose. Oh, who are we going to lose next week? We'll lose Senna. We're going to lose Senna next week and just blow everybody's mind.
I love how this is a genuine dilemma for you when I ask this question every week. How about you, Vittles?
So, Mikhail, I think he was sort of doing little things that made that first challenge harder than it should have been, even though they still got the money.
Yeah.
Charlotte, Coco, Senna, Bernard, Lynn, and then Stephanie, because I don't think the mole would get a tattoo just to save a challenge.
Well, I do.
Of course you do. I'm going to go with Senna as well, because he's basically been sidelined for two episodes. So if he's not the mole himself, I think he's sort of gone as far as he can without seeing, with like being off to the side so much, because we had the prison challenge. He wasn't really doing a lot in the mafia challenge. And then he didn't do anything with the silence. It was basically just a swimmer. That was it.
Yeah.
So I think sort of the number of challenges he's not really doing a lot in, I don't think he's really got that much chance to see what's going on compared to everyone else.
He's basically got to the point where with him, it's not what's said, it's what's implied.
Yeah.
He's very much in the background at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is inherently suspicious to me and why he's number one. I have no change from last week. It's Senna, then Mikhail, and then Coco, keeping with my three from my team. And then Charlotte's jumped up a lot this week for fairly obvious reasons. Bernard has jumped up again. Stephanie and then Lynn. And I'm going to shock you. I think going home next week is Lynn or Bernard.
No way.
What? No.
As much as I don't want Lynn to go home and make it 3-3 on the pool again, I definitely got the sense this week that Lynn was on her way out sooner rather than later.
Mm.
Much as I did with Bernard, actually. Bernard's story, I suppose, could be that he gets to the family visit and then his pregnant wife can't come out for fairly obvious reasons. But I think those two definitely got the most focus of being homesick, who aren't Coco, who was inherently suspicious this week. So I think I could definitely see either of them go next week. Anything else you guys want to say?
Nope. Just that, yeah, Philippe, the bleeding Philippe, he gone.
He gone, indeed.
Would they have accepted alphabet pasta?
SpaghettiOs.
The A from alphabet pasta, the B from alphabet pasta. I mean, it's a way to bump it up by 2,600.
Not using a doubler doesn't seem so bad anymore.
Yeah. So, thank you for listening to our Demolvelkia Season 12 recap. We'll be back next week to continue the hunt for the new small in Sicily. Don't forget you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, where we are RTV Warriors, or you can email us and contact us at rtvwarriors.com. Logan is on the artist formerly known as Twitter at LogsPagwacky, Binnels is a Grim Ring Capper, and I'm Mojo Halmstone. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rtvwarriors. Thank you to the Legion of Subtitlers. We will see you next week.
Peace out and just chill till the next of flavory.
Screw you, I can end a podcast with fucking Tagliatelle.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.